Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, Pam Hassan at CICK News and Smithers chats with the leader of the official opposition, Pierre Poilievre, and Skeena MLA and Conservative Party candidate for Skeena Buckley Valley, Ellis Ross. Poilievre and Ross were both in Smithers recently to meet with potential voters, and Pam had a chance to catch up with both of them following the event. Scott Onyachuk at CJLY in Kootenay made a stop at the yearly Seniors Expo to hear from patrons about a new cannabis wellness coach helping seniors deal with pain without the pharmaceuticals. Stay tuned. At CKTZ on Cortez Island, Lonnie Taylor chats with Dylan Stone, a musician in the Unfaithful Servants Band, about bringing his brainchild to life this month by launching a Gulf Islands tour. And in Terrace at CFNR, Sabrina Spencer checks in with Stephanie Cleland, an assistant professor at the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University, about safeguarding health during this challenging wildfire season. And in Revelstoke at Stoke FM VF2590, Melissa Jameson stops in at the Mount Revelstoke National Park for a pride event highlighting queer ecology and the importance of creating inclusive 2SLBGTQ+ events. Stay with us.
A recent pride celebration held at the Snow Forest Campground in Mount Revelstoke National Park highlighted the importance of creating inclusive 2SLGBTQ+ events. The family-friendly event took place May 10th and 11th and was hosted by the Mount Revelstoke National Park Field Unit in partnership with Parks Canada's National Pride Network. Each year, Parks Canada hosts pride celebrations in a different national park. Laura Bernier, Mount Revelstoke and Glacier National Park's Public Outreach Education Officer, said the events are driven locally, with a specific park field unit or site deciding to host an event.
This year, the Parks Canada National Pride Network partnered with Mount Revelstoke National Park to host an event here, and this was kind of special. They were really impressed with Ryan Collins' work on the locally produced film People Like Us, and they requested that we host an event to be kicked off by a screening of the film in the community, and then followed by family-friendly activities the following day.
The celebration at Snow Forest Campground drew in small crowds throughout the day, with around 60 people attending the event. Bernier said hosting the event at the campground during the day allowed youth to be involved in creating a fun and positive space. Youth from the Stoke Youth Network and Rainbows and Allies were at the event, offering button and bracelet making workshops. Kimberly Poirier with the Stoke Youth Network said events like the one hosted at Snow Forest Campground are important as people from the 2SLGBTQ+ community living in small towns like Revelstoke may feel more isolated compared to living in a more urban area.
And I think the attitude towards the queer community because of events like this have become a lot more positive in our community, and I think it's our job to keep that positive attitude going.
Members of Shuswap Pride were also at the event. Board member Joanne Whitstock spoke with Stoke FM about the importance of youth and family pride events. She said by far, one of their most popular events was a family-friendly roller skating event.
There's a time to drink a beer, and there's time to do a physical activity, and there's a time to do a cultural activity. They're all part of the mix of the types of things that interest people.
While there are currently no plans to host another Pride celebration, Bernier said the Mount Revelstoke and Glacier National Parks office hopes to continue to support 2SLGBTQ+ events by taking part in community celebration and diversity initiatives. For 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Melissa Jameson.
In Davaloan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. As wildfire season is already upon us in BC, Stephanie Cleland, an assistant professor in the Faculty of Health Science at Simon Fraser University, spoke with CFNR, emphasizing the importance of monitoring local air quality and taking precautions, especially for vulnerable populations. Her advice includes staying indoors during high smoke levels, recognizing early symptoms of smoke exposure, and utilizing air cleansers to improve indoor air quality.
Stephanie Cleland, I'm an assistant professor in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University, as well as a research scientist at the Legacy for Airway Health at the Vancouver Coastal Health Research Institute.
According to BC Canada website, the wildfire season for last year was one of the most destructive in BC's recorded history.
Yes.
Your expertise is regarding wildfire smoke exposure, health impacts of smoke exposure, and how to reduce exposure, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And obviously for this year, fires are already going off and there's already evacuations in BC. So what are some things that you can suggest to our listeners?
So in terms of reducing exposure to wildfire smoke, right, we're already seeing that early start to the wildfire season with the fires burning up north. And what you can do when it's smoky outside, my first recommendation is, when possible, check your local air quality. So checking Purple Air, checking the BC Government Air Quality Networks to kind of see what the local air quality is in your area, because this can help you make an informed decision about what sort of actions you should take to protect your own health. Because again, if you have pre-existing conditions, or if you are older or if you're younger, you might want to take different actions depending on your health status. I'd also recommend that people, when possible, if conditions get very smoky, they stay indoors. Close your windows, close your doors, and shelter inside, because often the air quality inside is going to be better than that outside. So trying to reduce your exposure by staying indoors and also reducing outdoor activities and time spent outside is a great thing to do when it's smoky outdoors.
I know you kind of mentioned already, but who is most of concern for these exposures?
So that's a great question. I think there's a few different populations we think about when we think about who is most at risk of adverse health impacts from wildfire smoke. And this often includes people with pre-existing conditions. So if you have a respiratory health condition like COPD or asthma, you're likely going to want to be more risk averse when dealing with smoking conditions. Similarly, if you're pregnant, if you're older, or if you have young children, you want to take actions to make sure that you're protecting yourself from wildfire smoke, because again, we're seeing the highest health risks in those populations.
When should people who have maybe prolonged exposure seek medical attention?
That's a great question, and it's up to the individual. Well, I would recommend that as soon as you start to feel your eyes sting or feel your throat burn or kind of feel any sort of effects, that's when you should shelter indoors, right? Take yourself away from the smoke, try and reduce your exposure. And if you have symptoms that are persisting, right, and something is changing in your health status, that's when I would recommend reaching out to your doctor or a health professional to seek additional guidance. Because, again, every person reacts differently to wildfire smoke, and everyone has different health conditions and different health status. But making sure you're listening to your body and kind of seeing how you're responding to the air quality is very important to take the correct actions to protect yourself.
Is there anything else you'd like to share or add with us at all today?
Yeah, I'd like to add is just make sure you stay alert and aware. Again, check your local air quality. If you have an air cleaner, make sure to run it when it's smoky outside. If you don't have an air cleaner, there's some great resources about how to build your own DIY air cleaner. So thinking about those sorts of things as we enter into the summer, what's likely going to be quite smoky, making sure you know where to find your air quality information, you have the contact information of your doctor, and you're able to seek out clean air spaces or build yourself an air cleaner is what I'd really recommend as we enter this smoke season.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
Deliver me from these chains. Deliver me once again.
This is a CKTZ News Update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. The Unfaithful Servants is a band based out of Victoria that is currently on a Gulf Island tour and will be visiting Cortez Island on May 25th. I'm caught up with Dylan Stone of the Unfaithful Servants to find out what inspired them to do a Gulf Island tour and give special attention to these rural areas. Do you want to start by just chatting about your history with Cortez?
Yeah, my big intro to playing music on Cortez was winning that the Bob Off competition at the first Love Fest, which was super fun. That's one of my favorite musical memories, really. So that was a really great way to just meet the whole musical community out there. And then I guess I've been back almost every year since with a few different bands. And I think I missed one year. We had the Servants play last year, which was super fun. And yeah, we all had an absolute blast, actually. It was great. So we're excited to come back.
Your name has something to do with Bob Dylan. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Dylan's actually my middle name. So I'm actually Robert Dylan. Full on named after Bob Dylan. And go figure that I grew up to love his music, hey?
Well, it sounds like your parents loved his music.
Yes, so I grew up around it for sure. I have all my dad's Bob Dylan records now. And yeah, I guess fitting for the guy who was named Bob Dylan to win the Bob Dylan contest.
Now your history with Love Fest. Yeah, you've been on the stage several times now at Love Fest. And Adam Dobries has also graced the stage of Love Fest, I think twice now.
Yeah, I saw his performance last year.
And how did he get connected to open for you guys for the Skulf Island tour?
It was my brainchild. He's been a friend of mine for years and years. And we were both really good friends with a mutual friend of ours, Cameron Latimer, who passed away a couple of years ago. He was a fantastic singer-songwriter. And him and Adam were super tight. And him and I were very tight. So Adam and I got close through our connection with Cam and just musical community. And so when the Unfaithful Servants had a pretty extended hiatus through COVID, and we were, after the band reformed, we were playing our first show in about 3 years. And I know that Adam had recently released some really great solo material. He's a fantastic guitar player. So I thought it'd be a nice touch to bring him into the show and just make it more of a familial kind of affair and vibe and just make it an even better night. And we all got along so well and the music just complemented so good. And we decided to invite him to come with us on this tour to open up for us still to keep that caravan vibe alive.
Sweet. What is your special connection to the Gulf Island?
I have played a lot of music on the Gulf Islands over the years. I played in a band called As the Crow Flies, and we did Gorge Harbor many years ago. We played under the gazebo and during the thunderstorm, which was a good memory. And we also did some swimming off of the harbor dock in there and the phosphorescence a long time ago when we were camping out there. I don't know. That was more than 10 years ago. So I always had good memories of Cortez. And then, as it turned out, my daughter's grandparents live out there. Oh, she just texted me as I said her name. She's only 6. She shouldn't be texting. I know. So I get out to Cortez every summer now for a couple of weeks, and that's where I vacation. Put vacation in quotation marks because playing music is always a vacation. I love the Gulf Island vibes and the people. And it's always such a treat to get to go play there because you get to go visit it and you get to play music, and it's always so rewarding. So I had this notion for a few years now to create a Gulf Islands tour and go around and visit all the islands. And also I think the idea first came out of like necessity, because it's so hard to tour in this part of the world. Like you get off out of Victoria and then it's like Vancouver and then I don't know, Revelstoke and then Calgary or whatever. If you want to go to Nelson, you got to go the other way. And it's so far to go to get to anywhere. And there's not like great venues happening. There are here and there, but they're so spread out. So it's actually nice to get to tour the Gulf Islands. It's its own little circuit that isn't too far. And yeah, so it's an amazing kind of confluence of work and life meeting.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Okay, so I have Jesse Woodward here from Kootenay Seniors. Thanks for joining me, Jesse.
Oh, you're welcome.
So we're getting started. You have some exciting stuff coming up in the next couple months, but we'll give a little background information. Can you just explain what Kootenay Seniors is?
For sure. So I've been working there as a program assistant for about the last 6 months. Kootenay Seniors is an organization. It's a subsidiary of Nelson Cares. We run out of the 805 Nelson Avenue building, which is across from the Dairy Queen right before the Orange Bridge. And that's a 55-plus building, but we have our office in there, and we also run an amenity room in there. And Nelson Seniors is primarily, we have two big programs. We have a volunteer driver program.
Okay.
So that's for helping seniors get around where they need to go to. And we also have a light-duty house cleaning for seniors, which is really an important program for lots of. And the volunteer driver program is, you know, people need a ride from, say, Nelson to Trail for a hospital visit,
right,
or that kind of thing. And then we do that. And then, and the cleaning is usually people go in for a couple of hours and help out seniors who maybe have mobility issues. And that kind of thing.
That and the driving program, great services to offer, but I bet you it offers, you know, maybe a bit of companionship and getting some company. Not everyone's going to have visitors all the time.
That's right.
And maybe they don't even want visitors until they realize they get there.
Yes. And I mean, loneliness in seniors is a real issue. And, and I would say in the 6 months of this job, I've really seen that, like, when we get seniors to come out and have a social time, it's a wonderful experience for them.
Yeah, and so I bet sometimes they don't want to go, they don't want to do it, and then they enjoy it after, you know?
Absolutely.
They don't realize how much it's going to help.
Absolutely.
So a big reason you're here, we're going to talk about it in a bit here, is you have a Seniors Expo coming up on June 5th at Lakeside Place.
Yes. Before we do that, I just wanted to mention that we also have programming. So Kootenay Senior programs the amenity room at the 805 building. And we have on Mondays, we have a Qigong, Rise Up Singing. On Tuesdays, we have chair yoga and strengthening. And on Thursdays, we have coffee time. This is now open for everyone that's in that building, but also the community members.
And what's the turnout like for those events and feedback maybe from some of the attendees?
Yeah, like the Qigong and the chair yoga will often have 10 to 15 people in it.
Okay.
And that's people, and you know, it's part of it is the exercise. Part of it is the sociability and getting out and seeing people and chatting. And so that's every week, so people can get into a rhythm. So if you're a local senior out there and you want to come and have a little social time and get some good exercise, these are all available. And of course, this is all on our website, which is Kootenay Seniors.
Yeah, the chair yoga is great because it's just, it gets them moving a bit, and it's not a huge hurdle or step. You can do it with any level of experience.
Absolutely.
My girlfriend teaches chair yoga in Fruitvale to seniors, and they love it.
Yes.
Like everyone, sometimes she'll do one-on-ones at their houses too, but
the
feedback's great, and that you hear like about just whatever. I've had hip pain for years, and just that little bit of mobility, it really goes a long way.
It really goes a long way. One of the other things that we're doing is we're running a seniors culinary experience program. That actually is funded by the Osprey Foundation, so I really want to send a thank you for that. So this is a 12-month program. We're a few months in. And June 11th is our next one. We're going to make fresh spring rolls. So this is where people can call Kootenay Seniors, sign up, and then they come on down and we like make food together. And also, wonderful way you learn how to make food, good healthy food, and you get to hang out with people.
And this, the culinary experience and all the other things, everything's free to enter?
Everything's free.
Yeah, that's great.
And then in July, we're going to be doing like healthy snacks and appetizers for like summer evenings and such that you're out with your friends. And then on August 13th, we have a Mediterranean quinoa salad. So people come, they learn to cook, they hang out, they chat, they eat. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a lot of it sounds like some, not your typical recipes here. So maybe a lot of seniors might be a bit old school in the way they cook.
Yes.
And, you know, we have a lot of, I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but we got food from all over the world here in Nelson, and they might not have experienced that before.
That's right. So the primary part of this program is to teach seniors how to cook, because many seniors, of course, are on their own, right? They've lost their partner, or they might be together with a partner, but cooking and feeding themselves, we discovered this through the research on this program, is a challenge. Like healthy, good food, simple food. that's cost effective, that's what we're trying to teach. And rather than having seniors just buying ready-made foods, which are very highly processed and not so healthy. So this is all raw food based, and you're building up a recipe from that.
Yeah, lots of benefits to all of it, whether it just be learning a new skill, but also, you know, staying healthy, like the stuff you offer on a weekly basis too.
That's right. So, and then, so finally, the last piece here is the on June 5th from 10 to 3 at the 805 building, we're running the Kootenai Seniors Expo. And so that has, we have about 8 tables, and each, you know, there's going to be the Nelson District Seniors Coordinating Society, Alzheimer's Society of BC, Cannabis Wellness Coach, the Nelson District Society, and Caregiver Support, and there's a bunch of other people that are going to be there. We'll have some, of course, snacks and drinks, and if the weather's nice, the deck will be open, so you can hang out outside, you can come and talk to the vendors, and hopefully it's a really nice time for seniors.
Yeah, that sounds like a great event there, and we were speaking before this, you're telling me it's an annual event, but it's changed a bit this year. I'm curious about the Cannabis Wellness Coach. Is that something that's new, and are you seeing, like, I know it's used, well, recreationally and medicinally now, but they're seniors, and, like, you know, a lot of people of that age, this was something that was, you know, taboo and
for sure
not something they'd be open to for a long time. So are you seeing more seniors opening up to using marijuana or other newer age medicines?
Well, I think when legalization happened, one of the biggest growth markets was the senior population. And I think primarily for them, it's pain control.
Okay.
And sleeping.
Yeah.
And there are a gazillion kind of cannabis products, and that's why this person's going to be there. They can talk to people like the different kinds of products and how to ingest those products. And of course, we know there are many stores in town that you can just go and purchase this. And this is for seniors, I think it's been an important move that the government made it legalized, and they were able to do pain control that's not pharmaceutical.
Right.
So I think that's why there's a lot of growth in that market.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of benefits to that, whether it be, you know, you got to be careful with pharmaceutical pain relief.
Yes, so. For sure. And I think that is very clear nowadays, is that pharmaceutical pain relief is very addictive. And cannabis, as far as I understand, is not a physical addiction. It can be a mental addiction. You can enjoy the experience of it, but it's not actually a physical addiction like opioids are.
Right. Well, whether it was or not, it's never going to be on that level.
Yeah, it's never going to. And so I think that's why we brought in the wellness coach. I think seniors might have some questions about that and that product, and she'll be there to help out.
All right, great. Jesse, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, was in Smithers last Friday for a meet and greet at All West Glass on Frontage Road near Highway 16. An anxious crowd of about 25 people waited for Mr. Poilievre's arrival. I was granted a small time to speak to the Conservative leader, and so here's that conversation now. I would like to know your take on our commercial steelhead sports fishing industry in the North Coast and Skeena region. Alaska is now the biggest harvester of BC salmon. How would you approach getting Southeast Alaska to move their interception fishing fleet, which harvests BC salmon, and get Canadian fishers back on the water?
We have to protect the sovereignty of our waters and make sure that our fishing rights are protected. And I think the DFO has done a terrible job at balancing the legitimate goal of commercial fishing with the need to protect the viability of the fit of the stock. And what I want to see is a lot more local control by the coastal fishing communities so that they can have proper input into how to do that. And we'll also stand up to the Americans where necessary to protect our fish stocks against their incursions.
Minority governments seem to be more commonplace. Would you push forward an agenda for proportional representation if elected?
No. What we need is a common sense conservative majority that will axe the tax, build the homes, fix the budget, and stop the crime. Right now what we have is a coalition. We're a costly coalition, Jagmeet Singh and Justin Trudeau, who have betrayed working people and Western Canadians, and the Canadians can't afford another 4 years of sellout Singh and Justin Trudeau. We need a new common-sense conservative government that will bring home powerful paychecks that buy affordable food, gas, and homes in safe neighborhoods.
Thank you very much.
Right, great to be with you, Pam. Yeah. Thanks very much.
After my brief interview with Pierre Poilievre, I was able to speak to Ellis Ross. I spoke to Ellis about the Rising Tides landmark agreement and why he was not present at the BC Legislature for the first reading of the Haida Nation Reconciliation Amendment Act in the BC Legislature. The act recognizes Haida title on Haida Gwaii land and waters, the first of its kind in Canadian history. Aboriginal rights are rights to lands that were exercised by Aboriginal people before colonial rule. Treaties, however, confirm the existence of Aboriginal rights and the ability of those peoples who entered the treaties to negotiate and conclude treaties between and amongst other nations. I mention this as Ellis Ross also makes reference to the difference between treaties and Aboriginal rights in our conversation. Here's my conversation with Ellis as he was traveling with Pierre Poilievre on his Skeena tour last week. The recent move to acknowledge Haida title, mm-hmm. being called on by so many Union of BC Indian Chiefs and the First Nation Leadership Council, why didn't you show up for the vote in BC Legislature?
I didn't show up for both votes, actually, mainly because I didn't get any clear answers in terms of what it really means on the ground. We've already seen agreements like this be reconciled, Aboriginal title with Crown title, mm-hmm. and the result of that becomes the Nisga Treaty, for example, or Manolth, mm-hmm. or Tawasin. Mm-hmm. So we have a clear idea of what the jurisdiction is and the roles and responsibilities of each party. With this one, I couldn't really see how it's going to be implemented.
You mean so clearly how it's going to be implemented to move over to Haida title? Or what was it that's, like, what was the confusion?
It's not the title that's, like, I'm a strong believer in Aboriginal rights and title. But when you really look at the court documents in terms of what has to happen next, Aboriginal title has to be reconciled with Crown title. So you got to figure out, okay, who's in charge, what are the rules? And in my questioning of the minister, I couldn't really figure out what the rules are going to be. Like, for instance, how do you protect private property? Mm-hmm. The minister said, yeah, without a doubt, we're going to protect it. Okay, but how? What's the mechanism? And I couldn't get a really good understanding of it. The other thing I've always said also, 7 years ago when I got into the legislature, is that I will not play politics with Aboriginal issues. I won't do it. And I'm the kind of person that says, okay, since I represent so many people, I expect facts and I expect the truth. And so if I get that, I can go back and I can relay that to the people I represent. And if I can't understand something, then I don't feel right in trying to explain it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write an article for this, for the newspaper, to fully explain what I think about the politics surrounding Aboriginal issues in BC, including UNDRIP, and including the Haida recognition, because we got so many examples of what worked and what didn't work. And so I didn't feel right in saying I can go to a vote unless I truly understood it, and I don't understand it.
And you didn't want to vote no and make that clear either?
I didn't want to vote no or yes. It's not fair to vote no and not truly understand what you're voting for.
Yeah.
It's not fair to say yes and not truly understanding it. I think Chilcotin title and Dick title will be similar until they can actually tell us exactly how it's going to work within the confines of BC and Canadian law. But the one thing I did get out of the minister that became a fact, I assume, is that with the Haida recognition title, the laws of general application will be applied. That means basically all the laws relating to Canada, BC, will be applied to Haida recognition title.
Okay.
So laws around speeding, crime, yeah. all those kind of that. And that's what's in the Nisga Treaty, for example.
Yeah.
But the other thing that was puzzling to me was the minister said it would not be based on a treaty format. Okay, that is the ultimate form of reconciliation in BC.
Yeah.
So if it's not going to be based on that, what's it going to be based on? And then they came up with this other term that said, oh, we're confirming title. And I said, yes, I know. Exactly like how Chilcotin did it through the courts. But what we're really talking about is, how do you reconcile Crown title with Aboriginal title? That's the core question. If Nisga achieved it, Manolth achieved it, Tawasin achieved it, but you're proposing something different, all I want to see is, what is your new format?
What does reconciliation mean?
The biggest thing I can see for the fellow conservatives is start to amend the funding agreements that First Nations live under. It's very restrictive. It's very paternalistic. I was a chief counselor for 6 years, and I was a counselor for 8 years. And the bureaucrats that actually administer the funding agreements actually punish First Nations if they don't do exactly as the funding agreement says. First Nation leaders evolve. They know what they're doing. They can make their own decisions. And I've actually run this by Pierre, and he likes it. Not only do you give First Nations more autonomy over the money that comes from Ottawa, but also it speaks to the self-determination of Indian natives to make their own decisions. And I think it's a big step.
And would you continue to support First Nations taxation initiatives as well?
That's Manny Jules, and he's got some very creative policies coming up, and Pierre Poilievre is very interested in that as well. But Manny Jules has been working at for 20, 30 years.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Ellis.
Thank you very much.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.